In the womb where I was conceived is where death took place. My brother passed away in the same womb where I began life.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm Victor Nieves, your co-host. We've often talked about the effects of abortion on men and women, but today we'll talk about losing a sibling to abortion.
Yeah, and the consequence of abortion spread not only to the baby's father, but to other family members and potentially siblings, both older and younger.
And most of those siblings are then left with questions, fears, and insecurities, knowing that he or she was chosen to live while their sibling was killed.
Yeah, and Dr. Philip Nye, who has done a ton of research over the years, he's a child psychiatrist, and he says that a common post-abortion symptom is that siblings experience a survivor's guilt. There's that sense, I don't deserve to be alive, and complicates his or her relationship with the parent.
That's right. And those symptoms can then manifest as depression, anxiety, shame, guilt, self-injury, low self-esteem, and dissociation. We'll be talking about all of this with three fantastic guests today. First of all is Dr. Teresa Burke. She's a founder of the Living Scripture Institute. Dr. Burke provides clinical training for mental health professionals and clergy. We're also joined by Amy Lang. She's been involved in the pro-life movement since 1998, and she found out that she had a sibling who died by abortion before her parents were married. We're also joined by Maria, who works in the legal industry. She found out about the loss of her sibling when her parents had a divorce when she was in her 30s.
Amy, Teresa, Maria, thank you all for joining us on this very important topic.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking us.
Let's start with you, Amy and Maria. I'd like for each of you to briefly tell us your story. And Maria, we'll start with you.
I found out in my 30s that my mother had an abortion. It came out because my parents one day, out of the blue, announced to us, myself, and then my brother and my sister, that they're getting a divorce. It was completely unexpected. All of us were already out of the house. We were all adults. And so that's why I mention it as a great divorce, because it was that phenomenon of parents getting divorced after all their kids are gone out of the house, and which is like a really big thing right now. But I never dreamed that this would happen to us because, you know, growing up, we were, you know, very Catholic. So it just came out of, it was just the biggest surprise of my life. My mother confessed that her and my dad had an abortion prior to them getting married. This prompted, first of all, a lot of shock from me and just kind of like a freeze sort of reflex because I had no idea what was happening. But then after that, I started searching, like a few years of soul searching and trying to connect the dots as to also why my parents' divorce explained like a lot of things about my upbringing, like, and how I was as a person. I was always struggled with depression. It made no sense. There was no reason for this depression, but there was always a darkness and a heaviness to my life, and I had no idea why. I started trying to search out whether everything was connected. So one day I Googled sibling abortion and like depression, just like a random like bunch of phrases, words to describe how I was feeling. And I stumbled upon Teresa Bonapartis's website, Lumina website. I think it was the only thing on the internet that I found that made this connection between like parents having abortions and then siblings of those aborted babies having like these kinds of symptoms. Sort of like feeling lost in life, feeling depressed for no reason, feeling just this sense of heaviness and also a sense of fear. Like fear, and then also, you know, these complicated relationships with your mother. That was the only resource I found on the internet, and I saw that she had retreats for post-abortive siblings, so I kind of like bookmarked that in my mind to go to one of them. Finally, everything aligned and I was able to go. And to make a long story short, obviously it's more complicated than that one retreat that I went on. After that retreat, like, I'm not depressed anymore, which is like, I know it sounds, I still struggle with a lot of things, but that heaviness, I have never felt it again. Because what I think that retreat helped me with was like making the world make sense for me. Because now it's like, I understand like why I'm like this and why
things fell into place, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, if the world doesn't make sense, it's a scary place, right? And there is a sense of foreboding, right? But when you have an answer to like one of the sort of the predominant ways that you are in your life, then when you have an answer, then the world seems less scary.
Amy, briefly tell us your story.
So for me, I have been searching all my life, you know, doing a lot of volunteer work. It wasn't until I was asked to pray in front of the abortion center, something like, this is why I was made. A few years later, I found out my brothers had abortion experiences. Fast forward, my parents always having marriage problems. But even backtrack, I was asked to be at a Rachel's Vineyard retreat because I, you know, got involved and such. And I went to it. I got involved with Silent No More. I was at the first one they ever had in DC as a prayer support for a friend that had just opened up to me that she had an abortion. I didn't know anybody that had an abortion, but I felt a calling to be on the sidewalk. I spoke with my dad. They had just had a big blow up, my mom and dad, and it was in January. It was a Monday after a homily on the upcoming Roe v. Wade. And I decided, I'm just going to ask him nothing about abortion. I'm just going to ask him, did you and mom have sex before you got married? He didn't answer that question, yes or no. He said, we had an abortion. And so the year before, because I'd been involved with the 40 Days for Life, I was the point person for a couple of years in Madison. And then there was a men and abortion conference that they had in Chicago. I needed to sit next to him, and I needed to sit next to him, not face to face, but next to him. And I just listened, and I was just like kind of in shock, but also grateful, because there was a puzzle piece that was placed in my life that had been missing. My parents lost their child to abortion before Roe v. Wade. And so that's all I know of where my sibling, I say he, lost his life in Milwaukee.
Amy, take us back for a second to when you very first found out about your parents' abortion. Can you expand on how you felt in that moment?
I was shocked. I sat there and I just listened. But also I felt grateful because it was this puzzle piece that was just placed there. I can see my life, it's all connected.
And Maria, you mentioned that same feeling of shock. Could you tell us more about that moment for you when you first found out?
Actually, it wasn't even my mom that told me. It was my sister. And I still remember the day that I found out. I was at work and she called me at work and just kind of blurted this out. Well, first of all, she told me that my mom was leaving my dad. And then she told me about the abortion. So it's just like absolute shock. I didn't know how to feel. We felt bad that this was happening. And so it was immediate, like we didn't really even deal with our own feelings. We were so concerned with protecting my parents, first of all, that later it didn't like dawn on me what I lost or how this would have affected me until much, much later.
I was actually just starting to read the book Unplanned, right in the first couple chapters where she had the ultrasound experience of the abortion. So in the womb where I was conceived is where death took place. My brother passed away in the same womb where I began life. And that was so that first initial shock, but that was only moments later.
That's a very profound thing you said. Something that I had never actually contemplated before is that where you were conceived, death had taken place for a dear loved one. As we discussed, your father's alive was opposed to the abortion. Did you talk in any detail with him about the situation?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to him a lot. And what is beautiful in our story, that there's beauty in it, is that I have been involved with Rachel's Vineyard. I have been involved in post-abortion ministry. You know, why am I called to be a part of this? Because I'm not post-abortive. But then I realized I've been living with a post-abortive mother and father my whole life, right? Yeah, he went on Rachel's Vineyard within a week. Dear friend in Madison put him in contact with her. And sure enough, they went on to a retreat.
Have you thought about naming your missing sibling? And if so, what names have you chosen? Maria?
We had a little bit of a family ceremony to name our siblings. This was soon after we found out about everything coming out about my parents' divorce and the abortion. I feel like we did that almost to just sort of tie up those loose ends very quickly to not deal with the full ramifications of what this actually means for us, right? I don't feel like I should name my siblings because I think my mom already did that. And that was her prerogative. And sorry, and I'm saying siblings because my mom only did have the one abortion previous to having us. And I feel like that was a boy. But afterwards, also due to like complications of her health and fertility and probably, you know, complications from the abortion as well, maybe. She also had a number of miscarriages after us. So after she had me, so we kind of treated them as, you know, all lost siblings, right?
Absolutely. They are your brothers and sisters, just as much as your living brother and sister. Amy?
So it's very interesting because my parents have gone to counseling their whole married life, pretty much. We knew that they had marriage issues, but had no idea that they had lost a child to abortion. So the counselor knew about it and said, this is what my dad remembers and tells me that, well, you can name your child, you know, maybe. And then they kind of like were kind of stunned, I guess. And then he says, Tony, you know, Tony could be a male or female. And so that kind of what my dad for many years kind of just held on to. And so he shared that with me. Even my sister senses that we had an older brother. So Anthony is our older sibling. And both my brothers chose Anthony for the confirmation name. My older brother is named Anthony Jude. And I love him dearly and grateful for knowing he exists and he is here to love.
As we continue with your stories, Maria and Amy, I'd be curious, what was your healing process like? Let's start with you, Maria.
You know, after my parents' divorce and after finding out about the abortion, I was going through some kind of hard times. Like I was going through unemployment. And once again, I was just like, why? Always with this question, why am I the way that I am? Like, what's wrong? Why can't I just get it together? Like, so one day, like I said, I Googled, I found the whole like Teresa's retreats. What happened is a little while after that, maybe like a year or so after, I had a breakdown. Like a nervous breakdown, a lot of complicating factors and relationship issues, stuff like that. I was at such a low point in my life. I had to move back to my mom's house. And out of the blue, I got an email again from Teresa. And she's like, oh, just to let you know, the retreat didn't happen earlier this year due to conflict, but now it's being rescheduled and it's happening in September. You know, it's happening like in several weeks if anyone's still interested. And so I just kind of like grasped that from what I was going through. So I was like, okay, maybe this is the answer, right? So, and yeah, a lot of spiritual work happens. I remember it was very loving, like it was a very loving atmosphere. The priest that was there was very loving and just a beautiful weekend. And then I actually went on a second retreat several years later. I was able to connect with my siblings. And that was a very special experience because now I was like in a, like I was out of that chaos, that emotional chaos. I was more on solid ground. We are a complete family. It's just that some of us are not on earth right now. Some of them are in heaven.
Amy, how about you? What was your healing journey like?
Well, I think it's a continuous journey. And the beautiful thing is being able to connect with others that have gone through the same experience. And so the retreat that I went on was quite small, but I've been able to stay in contact with two quite a bit. The retreat was just a day retreat that I had went on. But to go back to when the real healing journey like started, when I found out, was we had a miscarriage. Like I went to this retreat earlier in the year and then we had a miscarriage in May. And so that was really interesting to go through that. So we had a burial for AJ, for Anthony's Josephina, and my mom came. I can grieve the loss of my child, but my mom can't and hasn't ever been able to. My heart just went out to my mother in that. And so that was in 2012, and she passed away in 2016. the relationship with my mom really grew at different times. One year, she never called me on my birthday. And boy, was that hard for me. My birthday is special to me. And this is before I even knew about the trauma of abortion in our family. And I remember the following year, I'm like, I am not going to let this bother me. I am going to call her in the morning and thank her for the gift of my life. So that's what I did every year from that. And she had said to my dad one day, because she was out of off of all of her like medication and stuff like that. She was losing weight because I was born in July. So beautiful sunny day. And I got this message from her and I just treasured it, that she thanked me for calling her that morning. I mean, I'd been doing that for many years. And that was the one time that I got a receiving of a thanks from her. So anyways, that part of the journey of healing was really great.
Thank you, Amy. I just want to point out to you, the listener, what you've heard demonstrates in a very clear fashion that abortion doesn't just impact the mother and the baby or the father. It impacts many around them. Dr. Burke, thanks for your patience. Tell us from your professional point of view, what are some of the symptoms that you see in siblings who have experienced a loss due to abortion?
I do see it as an attachment injury because there's a rupture in the mother's and the father, a rupture in this very fundamental human instinct to nurture and protect young. And so once that is violated, there is a very deep severance. You have symptoms of PTSD. And the PTSD is also given to you guys. And even the pregnancy itself is fraught with triggers. So parents do pass on their own unresolved trauma to their children through their parenting style. And so again, that not only do you have the doses of cortisol in your womb, but you have them as you're trying to learn to self-regulate. And the other difficult thing is that a lot of children, because the mom has a flat affect, she's usually depressed, she might be using substances, all that early bonding period when she would be making a lot of eye contact and coos. And more important is going to tend to a child who is screaming and crying, as all babies come into the world doing, you know? And so a lot of survivors mention, I just freeze, or I feel angry all the time, or I want to get out of here. I don't want to live with them. And that's because your nervous system is kind of high-wired in this nervous state, and the skills to self-regulate are not passed on to you. I think that there's more people in the world who are unhealed than are healed.
Dr. Burke, let's talk about the healing and how does the healing come about?
That's going to be a unique journey for many people. When I teach in hospitals, it's those in hospice who come up to me who say this issue is front and center, those who work in hospice, that people might be able to delay and avoid thinking that there was anything wrong. I've met people who it never bothered them till they had their first child or till their daughter had a child, or till they're dying of cancer in a hospital. And then suddenly the issue is front and center. So how long they can ward off feelings of unresolved grief, ambivalence, trauma that's been deeply repressed. Because from those who've come to us, I think those who had a history of trauma are the first to crack. I think the awareness of post-abortion programs is really important and making them aware. But there's also, I think that there's many ways to do this, but I think in a faith-based program, you're really going to have the greatest hope, which is of reunion and communion with your child after this life. And that's the greatest hope. For other people, it can be just an acid drip of regret their whole life, and maybe some counseling, maybe hypnosis, maybe whatever. But I haven't seen that kind of healing. And I know people who have gone to counseling their whole lives, and they say that nothing ever hit this wound until I came into this psycho-spiritual realm. Rachel's Vineyard, of course, is a sensory-based treatment. So there's a lot of things that you hold and you touch. You're pouring water, you're lighting candles, you're smelling scents, you're listening to music, because trauma happens to us in the body. And we have to access those memories through the body in a sensory-based way because it keeps people grounded. Otherwise, they go to therapy once or twice and they never go back. I think that healing is being able to say you're sorry to yourself for you know, to the child. They might know that God forgives on an intellectual level, but they can't forgive themselves. Mm-hmm. So I said, say you're sorry to yourself in recognizing the grief, but then forgive yourself for what's been so painful.
One last question I want to ask you, and you've touched on this, but I've called it the circle of death. And that is for siblings who have survived and they're aware that their other siblings were aborted, that they were taught that life, human life, is expendable when it's inconvenient or unwanted at the time.
Yeah.
And then when those adults get to the age where their parents are old and infirm, it is easier, I think, for them to look at these parents who are perhaps inconvenient, who are sucking away the inheritance money, and that circle of death comes full term, where they have been taught that human life is expendable, and then they opt for euthanasia or treatments that cause their death. Do you see that as part of our society today?
I absolutely do. I don't think that that notion is lost on anyone in this culture. Everyone's expendable. Marriages are disposable. Sex partners are disposable. Old people are disposable. Anything that inconveniences or calls forth a charity of love, of care, of attachment. That's why I said the attachment, when that's ruptured, everything goes. I don't think society can really remain healthy in that way. And it makes sense that kids would go out and to join gangs where they can feel like it, and shooters are going to make everybody pay for their misery in a last moment. And I think it attributes to the mental health crisis we have throughout the world. And it is a problem, Brad. You're right about that. Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you all, Maria, Amy, and Teresa. It's been a joy to have you here to bring to light the reality of abortion impacting so, so many people in such profound and difficult ways.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Brad.
Well, Victor, this program has shown us how abortion deeply impacts not just the mother and child and maybe the father, but it impacts a wide circle of people. And today we heard more about how it impacts the family. And Teresa said something that I think is very important to hear. And she said, what doesn't get transformed is transmitted. So if you are out there and you are experiencing and trying to deal with an abortion that your parents were involved with, it is important to deal with it, to move on. And I think today's program, we've given you some tools on how to do that.
That's right, Brad. And you know, I think today's program has also shown how big of a problem this really is, especially through their testimonies. And I'm glad that they came forward with this because there are so many other people out there who have also lost a sibling to an abortion. And the damage that that did to them is so significant. So I'm proud that we could highlight their stories today.
One of the things, Victor, that was brought out today also is that what Maria and Amy said is they got permission to dump all that anxiety that they grew up with, that it wasn't Amy's fault that her mother was so going off the rails and taking it out on her. It wasn't anything she did, or it wasn't how she behaved. It was due to the abortion. And if somebody is listening to this program and in that situation, please consider the fact that maybe an abortion is in your family's past, and go to our website where we can provide resources that will help you pursue that matter.
That's right, Brad. And I want to again encourage you, our listener, to make sure to use the resources that we've put together on our website, whether it's for yourself or maybe a friend, a family member, someone in your community, your church. We all probably know someone who could benefit from these resources. At our website, lifeissues.org, you'll find more testimonies of sibling survivors. You'll find more documented research on this topic. And you'll also find links to these healing programs that we've discussed today. Again, those resources are available for you at lifeissues.org. I highly encourage you to make use of them. And as always, be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk